tree. Lovey-dovey, lovey-dovey, lovey-dovey all the time. Ooh-wee, baby, I sure show you a good time. Cause I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. Play my music in the sun. I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I sure don't want to hurt no one. Keep talking about me, baby. Say I'm doing you wrong. Well, don't you worry, don't worry, no, don't worry, mama. Cause I'm right here at home. You're the cutest thing I ever did see. Really love your peaches, wanna shake your tree. Lovey-dovey, lovey-dovey, lovey-dovey all the time. Come on, baby, now.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 73 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid-50s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
This is Barbara Foster on January 9th for the Talking Information Center with a diabetes update. Diabetes vaccine gives promising results in a genetic subgroup. Source, Linköping University. A clinical study led by Linköping University and financed by pharmaceuticals company Diamyd Medical has investigated whether immunotherapy against type 1 diabetes can preserve the body's own production of insulin. The results suggest that injection of a protein, GAD, into lymph nodes can be effective in a subgroup of individuals. The results have been published in Diabetes Care. In type 1 diabetes, the body's immune system attacks the cells that produce insulin. When the insulin-producing cells have disappeared, the body can no longer regulate blood sugar level, and a person with type 1 diabetes must take exogenous insulin for the rest of his or her life. A highly topical question in research into type 1 diabetes is whether, and if so how, the attack of the immune system can be slowed or even completely stopped. One possible strategy is based on altering the immune defense by injecting a protein that the cells of the immune system react to in a form of vaccination. One of the proteins against which the immune system often forms antibodies in type 1 diabetes is known as GAD65, glutamic acid decarboxylase. Professor Johnny Ludvigsson at Linköping University has studied for many years the possibility of vaccinating people who have newly diagnosed type 1 diabetes with GAD. It is hoped that the immune system will become more tolerant against the body's own GAD and stop damaging the insulin-producing cells, such that the body can continue to form some insulin. Studies have shown that even an extremely small production of insulin in the body is highly beneficial for patient health. People with diabetes who produce a certain amount of insulin naturally do not develop low blood sugar levels, hypoglycemia, so easily. they also have a lower risk of developing the life-threatening condition ketoacidosis, which can arise when the insulin level is low, says Johnny Ludvigson, senior professor in the Department of Biomedical and Clinical Sciences at Linköping University. Johnny Ludvigson has led Diagnode 2, a clinical phase 2 study in which researchers investigated the effect of GAD alum diamide injections into the lymph nodes of 109 young people with recently diagnosed type 1 diabetes. The natural insulin production of the participants was measured at the start of the study and again after 15 months. Several other outcome measures were also followed, such as change in long-term blood sugar levels, HbA1c, and how much supplementary insulin the patients needed to take every day. Previous studies of immunotherapy in diabetes have suggested that genetic factors play a role in how patients respond to the treatment. This led the researchers in Diagnode 2 to look at several variants of what are known as HLA genes. These genes code for proteins located on the surface of some cells. They function as holders of proteins and expose them to immune system cells passing by. If the protein fragment exposed in this way comes from, for example, bacteria in the immune system, should form antibodies against the foreign protein. However, the immune system sometimes reacts against the body's own substances, and certain types of HLA are associated with an increased risk of type 1 diabetes. The HLA variant, HLA-DR3-DQ2, exposes the GAD65 protein to cells of the immune system, and patients with this variant often form antibodies against GAD65 at an early stage of the disease. Around half of the participants in the study had the HLA-DR3-DQ2 variant. For the complete patient group, there was no difference between treatment and placebo in the degree to which insulin production was preserved. GAD alum did, however, have a positive effect for the subgroup of patients who had the DR3-DQ2 variant of HLA genes. The patients in the subgroup with the DR3-DQ2 type of HLA genes did not lose insulin production as quickly as the other patients. In contrast, we did not see any significant effects in the patients who did not have this HLA type, says Johnny Ludvigson. No undesired effects that could be related to treatment with GAD alum were seen during the study. Treatment with GAD alum seems to be a promising, simple, and safe way to preserve insulin production in around half of the patients with type 1 diabetes, the ones who have the right type of HLA. This is why we are looking forward to carrying out larger studies, and we hope these will lead to a drug that can change the progress of type 1 diabetes, says Johnny Ludvigson. Traveling with insulin in the U.S., practical tips for managing diabetes on the road. By Karen McKnight and Laura Hieronymus. The start of this decade was when futurists thought we would be working in a 3-day week, commuting in flying cars, and spending vacation on other planets. Instead, Americans are working more days with longer hours and forfeiting vacation at an average of 4 days per year. And when days off are taken, many people do not disconnect and leave work fully behind. Figuring out how to unplug can improve both your physical and mental well-being. Whether you choose a staycation, long weekend, or a week away, it is important to enjoy vacation time. Taking the opportunity to embrace well-deserved time off to explore, learn a new skill, or simply relax can help you reset your frame of mind. When you take insulin, the new environments and routines that vacation time brings may affect your diabetes, but with some advanced planning, you can enjoy yourself while keeping your diabetes in check. The following strategies can help. Start with the basics. Start planning your vacation with an honest assessment of how well you understand what is required to maintain good blood glucose management. Ask yourself the following 4 questions. Do I know how my diabetes medications work to lower blood glucose? Do I have a good understanding of how certain types of foods affect my blood glucose? Do I have a plan to stay hydrated and make healthy food choices? Do I understand how more or less activity changes my blood glucose? Speak to your diabetes care provider and or your certified diabetes care and education specialist who can help fill in any gaps. The more you understand your diabetes, the better prepared you are to deal with changes that may occur in situations, such as travel, that are outside your usual routine. Before your trip, also be sure to ask your health insurance company what coverage you may have if clinic visits or hospital care are necessary, should you have a medical emergency while traveling. If you do not have coverage while you are away, ask for recommendations about purchasing travel health insurance and make sure you understand the terms in detail prior to your departure. Pack strategically. When packing, be sure to calculate how much diabetes medication and supplies you will need during your trip, and then pack at least an extra 2 or 3 days worth. If you are flying, put enough of your insulin and supplies in a carry-on bag to deal with any delays, and the rest in a separate piece of luggage. Do not put insulin or other diabetes medications in checked luggage because it could be affected by temperature or pressure changes. Be sure to pack ketone strips and glucagon just in case your blood glucose levels trend dangerously high or low. It is a good idea to use insulated and padded pouches to keep your medications and supplies safe from extreme temperatures and light and protected from breakage. You can find a selection of bags and pouches to fit your needs by visiting specialty diabetes suppliers' websites. Also, to prevent or treat hypoglycemia, low blood glucose, and avoid being empty-handed when hunger strikes, remember to pack snacks that travel well, such as protein bars, nuts, and carbohydrate sources, such as glucose tablets. If you are flying the friendly skies, consider taking small, non-perishable meals, which may be needed if there are delays or if suitable food is not available at the airport. Air travel. In advance of your travel date, check the U.S. Transportation Security Administration, TSA, website for the most recent guidance about traveling with diabetes medications and medical devices. www.tsa.gov/travel/special-procedures. Here you can also download a TSA notification card, a wallet-sized card for individuals with disabilities and medical conditions. Complete the card before the trip and present it at the checkpoint with your boarding pass and identification. Or better yet, register for TSA PreCheck, an expedited security screening program designed to help travelers departing from the United States. If you use an insulin pump or wear a continuous glucose monitor, CGM, carry an airport information card provided by the manufacturer of your devices. While the TSA officials receive training to identify diabetes medications and devices, this extra preparation may help your screening go more smoothly. Be sure all your medications are in original packaging, with the original prescription label attached. Additionally, carrying written prescriptions and a letter from your healthcare provider may also be helpful if questions arise. Common airport security metal detectors will not affect your pump or CGM, and your devices will not set off an alarm. In contrast, it is not advisable to send your pump or CGM through an X-ray equipment or the full body scanner at the security checkpoint. You may request an alternative pat-down screening instead, or, if preferred, remove your equipment before going through the scanner. Travel across time zones. If you travel across time zones, remember to adjust the time on your blood glucose meter, CGM, insulin pump, etc. as you cross those lines. If you take injections of basal, long-acting, and bolus, rapid-acting insulin, take your bolus as usual for your food, but be aware that your basal insulin needs will change across time zones. Be sure to follow guidance regarding insulin dosing from your diabetes care team. Some general tips will help you prepare for that conversation. With travel to the east, your day will have fewer hours, so you may need less basal insulin at the beginning of your trip. Ask your diabetes care team to calculate a reduced basal dose for the start of your travel. Set your watch to your destination time. Once you arrive, you will likely need to take your usual basal insulin dose at the routine time in the destination time zone. If you are traveling to the west, your day will be longer, so you may need more basal insulin or an extra injection for the longer day. If you go across 5 or more time zones, you will likely need an extra meal. In general, plan to take your usual basal insulin dose the day before you travel. At the start of the trip and with confirmation from your diabetes care team, you may need to take half your usual basal dose at the usual time in your departure time zone, then change your watch to your destination time zone. When your watch indicates the usual time for your basal dose, take the other half. The next day, you will likely resume taking your full dose of basal insulin at the usual time using your destination time. If you use an insulin pump, consult your diabetes care team for assistance with planning for changes in basal rates during travel. You will likely need to change the time on your pump as you cross time zones. Your pump manufacturer's website may have some additional tips on traveling with an insulin pump. Upon arrival at your destination, most people can resume their usual medication routine. It may also be helpful to monitor blood glucose more closely to ensure it stays within target. Just like at home, changes in foods, activity, and some climates can contribute to fluctuations in your blood glucose. Destination plan. Exploring the food and drink of your vacation location is often an important part of the trip. Local restaurants, festivals, and food stands help you to experience the culture fully. Learn as much as you can in advance about the regional foods. Become familiar with ingredients so that you can identify the foods with higher carbohydrate content to plan accordingly. Focus on lean meats and non-starchy veggies. Ask how foods are prepared. Share portions of higher carbohydrate foods with others. And go easy on carbohydrate-containing beverages. Do your best to limit alcoholic drinks to meal times, with no more than 1 serving per day for women and 2 servings per day for men. A serving is generally 12 ounces of regular beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of distilled spirits. Your activity type and level may be different or vary during your trip. If you're having a leisurely trip, you may find you require more insulin than you do at home. Conversely, if you're more active than usual, you may require less insulin. If your travel takes you to a very high altitude, the changes in air pressure during flight and at your destination may affect the accuracy of blood glucose devices and/or affect your blood glucose readings. This may also cause trapped air in insulin pump tubing, affecting the accuracy of insulin dosing. Speak with your healthcare team about how to prepare for and handle these situations. Some people with diabetes report that changes in humidity and temperatures affect their blood glucose levels. In hot or very dry climates, dehydration is a risk that can result in higher than usual blood glucose. Close monitoring of blood glucose can provide the needed information for you to take action in a timely manner. Weather can also affect skin health and make it necessary to use more lotions or protectants, and heat and humidity can additionally affect the adhesive properties of your diabetes care devices. Seek advice on how to handle any issues with your diabetes care team, and contact your device manufacturers for guidance specific to their products. Participating in physical activity also involves taking good care of your feet. Always wear shoes, even on the beach or in the ocean. Sturdy, water-safe shoes are available. Away from the water, be sure your shoes fit well and are comfortable, and wear socks that cushion your feet. You will need to bring at least 2 pairs of shoes so that you can alternate them day to day. Also, pack some house slippers to help protect your feet from injury while you lounge. Remember to take a good look at your feet every day and use good lotion daily on the outside surfaces of your feet, avoiding between the toes. Happy trails. As you pack to return home, repeat the measures you took to get to your destination. Take notes on your learnings to use on future trips. Having diabetes does not have to stop you from enjoying all this world has to offer. Realize that you have a lot on your side, articles like this to help you prepare, your diabetes care team to help you work out a plan, your traveling companions, and the people you meet along the way to help you make memories. Bon voyage. COVID-19 global pandemic and travel. According to the U.S. Transportation Security Administration, TSA, the agency continues to adjust its security operations during the COVID-19 global pandemic. A webpage has been established to provide resources and information to assist passengers who travel during this time. TSA is ready to meet the current and future security needs of the nation's transportation systems and remains dedicated to keeping travelers as well as the frontline workforce healthy and secure. Visit this webpage for the most up-to-date information regarding this topic. www.tsa.gov/coronavirus. Extended travel. If you take an extended trip, especially if you're away from more than 3 months, you will need to prepare to ensure that you have the medications and supplies that you need. Take copies of your written prescriptions and keep them in a safe place. Ensure all prescriptions are up to date and not expired prior to and during travel. Some tips. If you are traveling within the U.S., your home provider can call in a new prescription to a local pharmacy. Major pharmacy chains can usually locate your prescription refills in their system. Mail order pharmacies and suppliers may be able to ship your medication or supplies to your vacation address. If you are traveling outside the U.S., call the member services phone number on your health insurance card to request a vacation override so that you can fill more than the usual amount of your prescriptions. Contact your pump or CGM manufacturers for advice on getting items to an alternate location. From going to the stars to becoming one, Canadian country singer George Canyon's new memoir, My Country, reveals how his diagnosis with type 1 at age 14 set him on a new career path, by Tony Fitzgerald. By age 5, Canadian country singer George Canyon had his career path all planned out, and it did not involve a microphone. He wanted to become a pilot and then transition to becoming an astronaut so he could head to outer space. At age 12, he joined the Royal Canadian Air Cadets, a program focused on general aviation for kids 12 to 18. But 2 years later, Canyon's dream got derailed. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, and his Air Cadets captain delivered the crushing news. He couldn't join the Canadian Air Force, as he'd hoped, and he couldn't become a pilot. No one with the disease is permitted to join the military. Canyon quickly moved from devastation to desperation as he realized he no longer had the chance to be whatever he wanted to be. The team tried to think of a famous person with type 1 diabetes, this was decades ago, who had a successful public career. No one came to mind. "Back then, I couldn't even name one celebrity," he said. "People felt like they had to hide it, and that's absolutely ridiculous. Now, more celebrities are opening up and talking about type 1, and they're teaching people how important it is to know that we can do anything." Canyon couldn't do what he wanted back then, but he found something that made him feel just as alive and excited, performing as a country singer. He rose to fame by finishing as the runner-up on season 2 of Nashville Star, drawing particular support in his native Canada. He went on to have a top 5 single, earn a Juno Award, Canada's equivalent of the Grammys, and appear in several films. In November, Simon & Schuster released Canyon's memoir, My Country. It recounts his time on Star and years of working 3 jobs to support his family while he chased his music dreams. He also shares details of his diagnosis and how he lives with diabetes. Through it all, he has made an effort to connect with children. He wants to be the role model with diabetes that he lacked as a child, the famous person who shows them everything will be fine. Many kids really need that, even with the advances in medicine that have made it possible for Canyon to perform on stage while his team monitors his blood glucose levels. He recalls meeting 11-year-old twins who stopped taking their insulin. They told their parents they just forgot. But Canyon suspected something else was at play. As anyone with diabetes knows, the symptoms associated with high blood sugar are uncomfortable. Canyon sat down with the children to talk about what might be behind their behavior. And the truth came out, he remembers. They both wanted to be school teachers when they grew up. They were told by their teachers they couldn't do that because they were type 1 diabetics. And at that young age, they made a conscious psychological decision. Why bother taking care of themselves when they weren't going to get to live their dreams? They felt there was no purpose. He worries that kids often hear things that aren't true or will deeply impact them psychologically upon diagnosis. As a star with diabetes, he believes his job is to show kids what they can do so they can feel excited about the future. And that optimism can rub off on him, too. Technology has made a huge difference in managing the disease. He uses a Dexcom G6 continuous glucose monitor, CGM, which he jokes, "You couldn't pry out of my cold, dead hands. It really saves me so much hassle and so much stress." While he's on tour, his manager, assistant, and wife can access his blood sugar readings. "I've dealt with lows for so long," he says, "I kind of know how to deal with them." He has also realized that he needs to approach performances a bit differently. "I try to go on stage with blood sugar that's elevated. I don't like the word high. It has a negative connotation for kids with type 1, including me," he says. "I just know what good stress is going to do with me on stage with all the adrenaline. It's going to drop my blood sugar." He admits there have also been times when he took insulin on stage, but nobody knows it. Packing for a tour or media appearances like the ones he's making for his book can also be complicated by diabetes. It forces him to be organized. "For me, it has always been a bit of a struggle because I'm also worrying about everything else. You know, what am I bringing for gear? What do I have for clothing? How many shows am I doing? Am I doing interviews in between for TV and radio?" And then you put all the diabetes stuff you have to bring on top of all that, he says. "You just always have to be on top of things. But with me, being on an insulin pump and CGM now, it's become very routine-driven. Whereas before, with the standard treatment of diabetes with shots, there were a lot more things that could go sideways." Speaking of shots, he tells an amusing story in his memoir about learning how to give himself insulin shots during an extended stay in a hospital following his diagnosis. The nurse used an orange to show teenage Canyon how to give a shot. She told him it was his turn, and instead of jabbing the orange as she'd meant him to do, he stuck the needle into his leg. He recalls her horror as she watched him, worrying he might get an infection from the needle still dripping with orange juice. Little did he know that one day he'd be telling that story in a book that could help another child feel better about their diagnosis. He feels optimistic about their and his future. "If we don't see a cure over the next 10 years, I think you'll see huge leaps and bounds in where type 1 diabetics are, what we can do, and where we are accepted to do things we couldn't before," he says. "I really think things are going to change." Here's a recipe for winter squash risotto. 4 to 6 servings. Calories 228, fat 7 grams, saturated fat 2 grams, protein 8 grams, carbs 35 grams, cholesterol 6 milligrams, fiber 4 grams, sodium 573 milligrams. Dietary exchange is 2 diabetic carb count, 2 bread starch. Ingredients: 2 tablespoons olive oil, 1 small butternut squash or medium delicata squash peeled and cut into 1-inch pieces, about 2 cups, 1 large shallot or small onion finely chopped, 1/2 teaspoon paprika, 1/4 teaspoon dried thyme, 1/4 teaspoon salt, 1/4 teaspoon black pepper, 1 cup uncooked arborio rice, 1/4 cup dry white wine optional, 4 to 5 cups hot reduced sodium vegetable broth, 1/2 cup grated Parmesan or Romano cheese. Number 1. Heat oil in large nonstick skillet over medium heat. Add squash. Cook and stir 3 minutes. Add shallot. Cook and stir 3 to 4 minutes, or until squash is almost tender. Stir in paprika, thyme, salt, and pepper. Add rice. Stir to coat. Number 2. Add wine if desired. Cook and stir until wine is absorbed. Add broth, 1/2 cup at a time, stirring frequently until broth is absorbed before adding next 1/2 cup. Continue adding broth and stirring until rice is tender and mixture is creamy, about 20 to 25 minutes. Sprinkle with cheese just before serving. This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Prevention Magazine brings you great advice on healthy living, proper nutrition, safe exercise, and a positive lifestyle. Learn tips from leading researchers and enjoy your life for years to come. Prevention Magazine, coming up next on your audio reading service.
Welcome, this is Prevention Magazine, and I'm your reader, Francie Kiever, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Prevention Magazine, January 2023, and now I'll begin with 10 Things You Need to Know About Vitamins. No doubt you've heard claims they boost energy, save your memory, and prevent serious disease. But there is no one pill helps all solution, and good research is in short supply. Here's what you should know to make smart decisions. 1. Nutritious meals beat a pill or a powder pretty much every time. People forget they are supposed to supplement food, not replace it, says Monica Oslander Moreno, RDN, lead dietitian of Essence Nutrition in Miami. Vitamin supplements are useful to enhance the benefits of a well-balanced diet loaded with nutritious vegetables, fruits, whole grains, and proteins, not to offset too many drive-through trips. But despite the food-first mantra nutrition experts preach, more than half of Americans rely on supplements to try to meet their needs, and we spend close to $50 billion a year on them. People think it's easier to pop a pill than to actually address a nutrition knowledge gap or an intake shortfall, says Oslander Moreno. 2. Multivitamins might protect you from dementia and cognitive decline. Research on the efficiency of brain-boosting, memory-aiding supplements has been mixed, and in 2019, the Global Council on Brain Health published a report questioning so-called memory supplements, a multi-billion dollar business that targets the aging population. But the findings of a new study published in Alzheimer's and Dementia show that supplements could play a role in improving cognition and possibly slow brain aging. Researchers who were looking at whether taking daily cocoa extract or a multivitamin for 3 years could benefit cognition expected to see benefits from regular use of cocoa extract, but they instead found that multivitamins measurably improve memory and executive function in older adults. Our findings opened up a new avenue for investigation to identify a potentially simple and highly accessible strategy to protect against cognitive decline, says Laura D. Baker, Ph.D., one of the study's lead investigators and a professor of gerontology and geriatric medicine at Wake Forest University School of Medicine in North Carolina. Nothing is definitive, but, says Baker, we are planning a larger study with even more participant diversity to confirm our initial findings and better understand why multivitamins might offer protection against cognitive decline. 3. There are folks who very likely need certain supplements. People on restricted diets, as well as those facing food insecurity or with certain gastric disorders that inhibit nutrient absorption, might not be having all their nutritional needs met. Oslander Moreno recommends a B vitamin complex and iron, as well as an omega-3 supplement to some of her vegan clients. People with anemia or inflammatory bowel disease, as well as pregnant and lactating women, often need some degree of supplementation, too, she says. And folks who have had gastric bypass or live with Crohn's disease may also be deficient. People over 50 may need a boost of specific micronutrients in their diets, as we tend to absorb some nutrients like B vitamins less well as we age. Auslander Moreno recommends supplements not to all her clients, but only to those for whom intake of a nutrient is or risks being suboptimal, she explains. 4. Multivitamins are not proven to reduce the risk of cancer or heart disease. According to the latest report from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, UPSTF, there is insufficient evidence that your daily multi is protecting you from these two major diseases. When the task force examined the effects of vitamins A, B3, B6, B12, C, D, and E, as well as multivitamins, calcium, and several other nutrients, it found little or no benefit to popping a daily pill in preventing any form of cancer or heart disease, the leading cause of death in the United States. I and my colleagues have been following the literature around supplements, and there remains no convincing evidence that for otherwise healthy adults who have a healthy diet, supplements offer much in the way of benefits, says Jeffrey Linder, MD, Chief of General Internal Medicine in the Department of Medicine at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago, and co-author of an editorial published in JAMA. In fact, says Dr. Linder, relying on multis may breed complacency. Multivitamins and supplements are probably distracting people from things that will help them live longer, like eating a healthful diet, getting exercise, being a healthy weight, and avoiding smoking. That said, if you are not eating well or are at risk of deficiencies because of health condition, you should talk to your doctor and follow their advice on whether supplementing makes sense for you. Number 5. Not all vitamin supplements are created equal. The supplement industry is not regulated like the pharmaceutical industry is. The FDA, sadly, is under-equipped to regulate supplements, says Auslander Moreno, and manufacturers aren't required to gain approval or meet specific FDA safety or efficacy standards before products hit store shelves. I would prefer if we had a system where supplements were subjected to rigorous regulation and maintenance auditing to keep people safe and informed, Auslander Moreno says. For now, your best bet is to look for recognized third-party testing certifications that can verify the quality of what you're buying. NSF and USP, for example, ensure that a supplement contains what it says it does and that it doesn't have unacceptable levels of impurities. Number 6. You should talk to your doctor before you start taking a supplement. They can help you determine which, if any, vitamins you might need and whether there are potential interactions with medicines you are taking. Some supplements can change the metabolism, absorption, or excretion of prescription or over-the-counter drugs, and this can affect how well a medication works. If you're taking a blood thinner, for example, you should avoid supplementing with vitamin E, as it is also has a blood thinning effect. And someone taking a B12 supplement who is then given metformin for type 2 diabetes may require a bigger dose of B12 than before. That's why taking a DIY approach to supplementing isn't a great idea. Number 7. The first large randomized controlled study in the U.S. found that vitamin D pills taken with or without calcium had no effect on bone fracture rates. A daily dose of vitamin D does not guarantee healthy bones. People who have osteoporosis or low bone mass may still require a supplement. Some still argue that vitamin D supplements help with immune function and reduce inflammation. But it's more complicated than that, according to findings from the recent vitamin D and omega-3 trial, VITAL study. Low vitamin D levels are associated with almost everything from colon cancer to cardiovascular disease and other conditions, says Dr. Linder. However, there's no evidence that supplementing with vitamin D prevents any of these things from happening. Unfortunately, this is another ask your doctor situation. Number 8. If you hope to get pregnant, take a multi. This is advisable because it contains folic acid, a B vitamin important for metabolism and cell growth. Most people get enough. Many foods, including breads, pastas, and breakfast cereals, are enriched with folic acid, and folate is found naturally in a number of fruits, vegetables, and legumes, including leafy green vegetables, oranges, and beans. But folic acid is so effective at preventing some major birth defects when moms-to-be supplement with it before and during early pregnancy that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that all women of reproductive age take 400 micrograms of folic acid and that pregnant women also get 400 micrograms. Number 9. Certain vitamins can be bad for your health. Some have the potential to do more harm than good, especially at higher doses. One serious example is that people who have cancer should not take vitamin C during chemotherapy, as it may reduce the effectiveness of treatment. The USPSTF guidelines caution against beta-carotene, since it has been found to increase the chances of cardiovascular death and lung cancer, particularly in people who smoke. They also raise a red flag about vitamin A. In excess, vitamin A is associated with decreased bone density, hip fractures, and liver problems, explains Dr. Linda Petz, and kids should be kept away from vitamins and not intended for them. Number 10. There's a lot we just don't know. We should be investing a lot more in nutrition research, says Taylor C. Wallace, PhD, a nutrition scientist and an affiliate professor in the Department of Nutrition and Food Studies at George Mason University in Virginia. We already know that what we feed our bodies has a great deal to do with our short-term wellness and long-term health. But all things considered, there's not a lot of research being done to understand exactly which nutrients we need and in what quantities, he says. Only about 5% of the National Institutes of Health annual budget is allocated to nutrition research. That's why Wallace sees a daily multivitamin as a low-risk way to protect yourself against possible hidden micronutrient deficiencies. A multivitamin is like a bit of added insurance, he says. On to food, eat for a happier gut. What's on your plate can help balance your microbiome. Your gut microbiome, the collection of microorganisms living in your intestines, breaks down food and puts nutrients to use. But when the ratio of good bacteria to bad isn't in balance, it can affect your mental health, your risk for chronic diseases, and more, explains Rachel Hartley, RD, author of Gentle Nutrition. Genetics and lifestyle play a role in maintaining equilibrium, but foods that pack a mix of nutrients are also important, says Samir Berry, MD, a gastroenterologist and chief medical officer at Oshi Health. Go for probiotic foods like yogurt, which introduce beneficial bacteria to the gut. Prebiotic picks like whole grains, which feed good bugs, and fiber-filled options like vegetables, which diversify bacteria. Miso. Miso is made from fermented soybeans as it contains probiotics that support the growth of specific strains of bacteria in the gut to help build and maintain a healthy, balanced microbiota, says Hartley. Tempeh. Another fermented food, tempeh is made from soy and commonly enjoyed as a plant-based protein. It also contains prebiotics, which feed the good bacteria in the gut and contribute to biodiversity, says Dr. Berry. Got GI problems? Working with a dietitian as well as your gastroenterologist can help you identify which foods are triggering cramping, gas, bloating, constipation, and or diarrhea. Sunchokes. Though also called Jerusalem artichokes because they taste similar to artichoke hearts, these aren't actually related to artichokes at all, but they are packed with prebiotics, the type of fiber our bodies can't digest. This benefits the gut because it becomes fertilizer for the growth of good bacteria. Just don't eat more than a serving at once, or the high levels of indigestible fiber may lead to GI discomfort. And mung beans. Rich in fiber, legumes like mung beans help move food through the gut and the GI system to keep good and bad bacteria balanced. They're a smart choice for overall health too, as some research indicates that they may support good blood sugar, cholesterol, and blood pressure levels, Dr. Berry says. On to the nutrition section, how to cut back on sugar. Avoid these common mistakes and it'll be much easier. Some bad news, good news to start your year. Sugar is as lousy for you as you've been told, but you can eat less of it without feeling deprived, seriously. When you limit your intake by paying more attention to what you eat and when, it's likely you'll enjoy your food more. If you want to eat less of the sweet stuff, here are common pitfalls to avoid and what to do instead. The mistake, trying to steer clear of added sugar for too long. For most people, life with no sugar is impractical and no fun. Pucci Motel, author of The 3-Day Reset, recommends avoiding all added sugars for just 72 hours. That is long enough to help you readjust your taste buds, get into the habit of checking nutrition labels, and discover ways to satisfy your sweet tooth with whole and minimally processed foods, but not so long that it will seem intimidating or as if you're setting yourself up for failure. You'll feel a difference in your mouth and your energy, Molto says. After those 3 days, keep being mindful and you'll continue to take in less, which is the point, right? Mistake, not being clear about what you're trying to avoid. Giving up sugar and cutting back on sugar are too vague to be successful. Molto suggests allowing what she calls whole and minimally processed sweeteners, maple syrup, raw honey, rapadura, and coconut palm sugar, and limiting those to 1 to 2 teaspoons per day. You can decide for yourself whether to ban artificial sweeteners. Just make sure to set guidelines before you start, or else your sugar ban will be confusing and won't stick. Mistake. Ignore your sweet tooth. Some people view a sugar ban as a test of their ability to resist eating anything sweet, but Molto says that that's the wrong approach. The point is to find whole foods that satisfy your cravings, not to out-willpower your cravings entirely. You should make sure that you do satisfy your sweetness cravings, but with unrefined sources of sugar. She says, try eating fruit, or make a smoothie with bananas and dates, and or a small amount of honey. Next mistake, only avoiding sweet foods. Savory foods can still contain plenty of sugar. Just consider these foods multiple lists that surprisingly can have as much sugar as candy. Pasta sauces, cured meats, and ketchup. Read nutrition labels carefully, or if you're eating out, start asking questions. And be alert for terms like corn sweetener, demerara, evaporated cane juice, evaporated cane juice solids, fruit juice concentrates, dextrose, fructose, lactose, and other terms ending in O-S-E, os. For more sugar secrets, find tons of great tips for cutting back, as well as satisfying no-sugar recipes in Sugar Detox Made Easy at prevention.com/sugar-detox. And now into the wellness section, crochet. There are health benefits to creating beautiful projects with just yarn, a hook, and your hands. Looking for a little more tranquility? Crocheting offers a unique form of meditation in the way it combines mental focus, repetitive movements, and tactile sensations. The cozy project you get at the end is just a bonus. For me, I think crochet is mental but also very physical, says Selena Baca, founder of and lead educator for the American Crochet Association. The activity forces your brain and your muscles to learn new skills and at the same time gives your mind an outlet for relaxation. It's not just anecdotal. An international survey of more than 8,000 people who crochet shows that many use the craft to manage health conditions and life events such as chronic pain and grief. In my crochet communities, we constantly talk about how it's like therapy because of that meditative state, says Baca. It helps me to have something tangible and intangible at the same time. It's also fun to connect with and learn from others who crochet. Get the gear. To begin, Baca recommends purchasing thick, inexpensive yarn and a large crochet hook. Like a child learning how to color with oversized crayons, you'll have an easier time honing new fine motor skills when using bigger tools, she says. Start stitching. If you know someone who crochets, reach out to them. Baca says most people who already do it are eager to teach others. Otherwise, check out the American Crochet Association on YouTube. We have videos that will help you learn to crochet even if you're an absolute beginner, says Baca. And lastly, be kind to yourself. Learning a new skill can be fun and exciting. I don't want anyone to have that excitement fizzle because no one told them that crocheting is awkward, says Baca. It can be difficult. It can feel bizarre. Your first projects will likely be simple, like a mug rug or washcloth. So you can grasp stitch anatomy and how to work in rows. If it doesn't feel like you're getting the hang of it, just put it down and come back 10 minutes later, says Baca. With practice, you'll progress to more complicated patterns. If you want to kick things up when you've learned all you can from YouTube or a friend, search for local in-person classes or visit AmericanCrochetAssociation.com to sign up for one of their virtual courses. This site also offers resources for people who want to become crochet instructors. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Francie Kiever with Prevention Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3. Here's what's happening on the Armchair Adventure Hour. Starting Friday, February 10th, we have a book for anyone who loves Valentine's Day. Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid. A gripping novel about the whirlwind rise of an iconic 1970s rock group and their beautiful lead singer, revealing the mystery behind their infamous breakup. Everyone knows Daisy Jones and the Six, but nobody knows the real reason why they split at the absolute height of their popularity until now. Daisy is a girl coming of age in L.A. in the late 60s. The sex and drugs are thrilling, but it's the rock and roll she loves the most. By the time she's 20, her voice is getting noticed, and she has the kind of heedless beauty that makes people do crazy things. Another band getting noticed is The Six, led by the brooding Billy Dunn. On the eve of their first tour, his girlfriend Camilla finds out she's pregnant, and with the pressure of impending fatherhood and fame, Billy goes a little wild on the road. Daisy and Billy cross paths when a producer realizes the key to supercharged success is to put the two together. What happens next will become the stuff of legend. Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid, starting Friday, February 10th. The Armchair Adventure Hour, every night at 10, on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
The Midland Lighthouse for the Blind is currently hiring a production worker. Job summary: responsible for a variety of hand assembly production of writing instruments, safety and security items as directed by manufacturing manager or working foreman. Job functions and responsibilities: assemble writing instruments, package finished items that have been assembled. Additional responsibilities, if applicable: read work orders and pull the needed components from stock. Other duties will be assigned by supervisor. Qualifications: must be able to function in a team environment, and good work ethic. These positions are for legally blind and blind individuals. Individuals are defined as legally blind if central visual acuity does not exceed 20/200 in the better eye with correcting lenses. Alternatively, if visual acuity is better than 20/200, then field of vision in the better eye is limited to a degree that its widest diameter subtends an angle of no greater than 20 degrees. Benefits that are offered: health insurance, dental insurance, life insurance, retirement plan, NASA insurance, vacation and sick pay, profit sharing, tuition reimbursement, advancement opportunities. And for more information, you can call 325-653-4231 or visit 211 South Lee Street in Midland, Texas, or call the Recording Library at 432-682-2731.
Love them.